evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, February the 7th, 2017. I currently have 7:03 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's pledge will be led by Councilmember Geddes, and then the invocation will be given by the mayor.
Councilmember Geddes isn't here.
Oh. Okay. Rob, would you lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father, which art in heaven, we are grateful this day to be able to gather together as leaders of the Cedar Hills City Council. And we're grateful for our many blessings for this wonderful city that we live in, the freedoms and liberties that we enjoy in this country. We ask that our council and staff may always be able to do our work in a manner pleasing unto thee and the residents to whom we serve. And we say these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, first thing we need to do is approve the meeting's agenda. So if someone's had a chance to take a look at it and would like to accept the agenda as is or make changes, I will accept that now.
Could I suggest that we move item number 9 to the first as the schedule item, just so that we can let them have their say and then get back to their families.
So I go ahead and make your motion formally.
So I move that we accept the agenda as is, with the exception of putting item 9 ahead of item 8.
Ahead of item 3?
8.
8. Very good. So I have a motion to change the agenda slightly, to move item number 9 to ahead of number 8. If someone would like to second that, then we'll accept it.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, motion's been accepted. Any discussion on that? Let's have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. We will do that. Next item is public comments. And so I did happen to look at the list. I did not see that anyone had signed in on the public comments list, unless they did it at the last minute. So is there anyone here that's come to speak during public comments?
Mayor, I don't know if you saw the email that came in.
I didn't.
Mr. Roman, that requested.
He didn't. I didn't see it. It wasn't addressed to me.
Oh.
Okay. So
I'll do that then. He sent an email to all the city council requesting that we just read something really quick during the public comment. So if that's okay, Mayor, should I just read it?
Someone forward it to me. I will. I have that now.
Okay.
So we do have some public comments that were sent in, and I will read those into the record. It's from resident Ken Cromar. And it says, there is no mention of alcohol in this agenda item. Is alcohol part of any contract for the Community Recreation Center concessions? If so, may I remind you that you have yet to inform the public as required by the law about this issue to date, though you may have that opportunity now. Under the Open and Public Meetings Act, the following is required. 52-4-202, public notice of meetings, a public notice that is required to include an agenda under subsection 1 shall provide reasonable specificity to notify the public as to the topics to be considered at the meeting. Each topic shall be listed under an agenda item on the meeting agenda. If you plan to include alcohol in this proposed contract, you would do well to respect your citizens and the law by holding off on a vote on such issue until a proper and lawful public notice has taken place. In the end, alcohol may be desired by the council, but regardless, the legal process dictated in the Open and Public Meeting Act should be followed. Okay, so that was it. I see no disagreement with that and the agenda. So I think everything is in harmony there. All right, so let us move on. Now that public comments is over, let's move on to a public hearing. And we have just one public hearing. It's the amendments to the official zoning map of the City of Cedar Hills. Has anyone come to speak for the public hearing which is item number 4 on the official zoning map of the city. No? Okay, we'll close the public hearing and move on to our consent agenda. I only have minutes from one meeting. It is the January 17th, 2017 work session and city council meeting. So if someone would like to make a motion on the consent agenda, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay, I have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Geddes seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's go on to city business and reports. Start with Mr. Goodwin. Why don't you lead us off, and then we'll go down the row.
A couple notes on our recreation department. We have them meeting with Jack and Jill Bowling Lanes tomorrow to discuss a possible youth bowling program this summer. Last week we had our junior jazz player appearance, and it was former jazz player Thurl Bailey that came, and we had a lot of kids there. It was at the Pleasant Grove High School gym. He went through a couple drills with the kids, and it was a great event. And with the Utah Jazz, we have Cedar Hills Recreation Night with Utah Jazz on March 6th. They'll be playing the New Orleans Pelicans. And for $15, you can get a ticket, and that ticket includes popcorn and a drink, so a great family event. And then the event staff are going to be attending a wedding expo next Saturday. And if you know anyone thinking about getting married, send them to see our staff. Send them to come get an appointment for a personal tour. We are booking up dates very fast for this summer. As far as the golf course maintenance building, we are waiting on Highland Review to obtain a building permit, so that's coming along quite nicely.
Can I just ask a question about that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard that that's been in review for quite some time. Is that correct? Who's
the golf course maintenance building? No, there was one change that we need. There's a couple changes we needed, so we resubmitted the civils, but it's going along quite smoothly.
Okay. They shouldn't be dragging their feet.
No, they're not. There was one change, and it was on our end, so we've corrected that and moved forward. On Bay Hill Park, due to the weather and the extreme moisture, it is on pause right now. However, this pause is not going to delay the park at all. We kind of built these into the term. And then we are currently accepting requests for proposals for the park master plan, which are due next Wednesday, and we'll be bringing those to the council as well. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Geddes.
I have nothing to report. And thank when you. Is the next public safety meeting? I mean, who's going
to? We have to take action. The public safety board has to take action on that. I'll address that when it comes to me.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Zappala.
So we had a Lone Peak public safety meeting that a number of us attended. Just to briefly summarize that meeting. We had a presentation from a group called Heart of the Matter Solutions, which was looking at our Lone Peak fire services and making recommendations on how we might improve them. The presentation that was made walked through a proposal to significantly increase our fire staffing in order to be meeting existing national standards. That would push the budget from currently around $3 million for Lone Peak Fire to over $5 million. They recognized that this would likely not necessarily be doable and recommended some sort of middle ground, although it wasn't clear what that middle ground would be. But suffice to say, the presentation was recommending very significant increases to fire staffing, which would be very difficult with our budget that we have right now. And so this is an item that the council is going to need to discuss. I don't imagine Lone Peak moving forward that plan, but we ought to be prepared for making sure that we have the a good plan in place for our fire coverage.
Okay, that was well said. All right, so at our last Lone Peak Public Safety meeting, then a motion or a discussion was had about allowing cities to be able to appoint more frequently than the current bylaws showed people to the board, and there didn't seem to be any resistance to that, but it was only a discussion item. So the next item will be an action item, and I would assume that they will allow Cedar Hills to be able to appoint whoever they would like to that board. And so, Mr. Geddes, I'll let you know how that proceeds. I would not think that there's any problem there.
Okay.
Okay. on the first meeting of the year for MAG this year. They appointed officers. They asked myself to serve as chair again with Mayor Clyde as vice chair. That gives Cedar Hills a very good representation on that board once again. So, Mrs. Reese.
I met with the Family Festival Committee chairs. We do have dates set for Family Festival now, which are May 30th through June 3rd. And then we had some issues that needed to be discussed, but that's coming up on an agenda later tonight, so I'll wait until that comes up.
Mr. Bailey.
I don't have anything.
Mr. Crawley.
The Planning Commission met, and we discussed the and approved the schedule for meetings for 2017. And then we looked at the zoning map and had a few short discussions on that. But that's about it. It was a short meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's move on now to scheduled items. First is a review action item on adopting amendments to the official zoning map of the City of Cedar Hills.
Do number 9 first.
What's that?
We amended the agenda to do number 9 first.
So we did. I'm looking at the schedule as opposed to remembering what we did. And so we have an action item on awarding a contract to the Community Recreation Center concessions. Mr. Goodwin, time's yours.
Mayor and Council, as discussed in the work session, we have the golf course opening up here shortly. And with the events coming in the summer, we're in need of a patron to fill the void left by Cameron Burr and his team in the grill. So city has reached out to a couple vendors, most notably Six Sisters Deli and Grill based out of Eagle Mountain. And they came recommended by Councilmember Geddes. Staff went out there and took a field trip and did some investigation, and we tried our food. And it was wonderful. It was really good. Steph was very impressed. After that, we reached out to Monica. She's the owner. And invited her to submit a letter of interest. And we met with her on site. We toured the grill with her. And I believe she was impressed with what the city offered. But the city does feel a need that we do need to fill this space in order to provide this service to the people that come golf at our facility and the people that potentially have weddings or catered events. We feel like it's a very important aspect of this building, and it's a void that needs to be filled. So what we've added is the contract that we had with Mr. Burr. It's the original contract, so there's a provision in there that does not allow for the sale of alcohol other than catered events. And as I discussed in the work session, that's the same provision that we offer to anyone catering an event in our facility. They have to have the right licensing and from the state, and they have to notify the building, the event hostesses, of their intent to serve alcohol. There are steps that we have to make them go through. But as part of the contract, selling alcohol out of the grill is not part of the contract as it currently stands. So we are offering the same contract that we had with Cameron. Now, that contract does cover the city's basic costs of operating, having the grill being operated, so that there is no subsidy from the public in order for whoever is the tenant of the grill to operate. It covers the gas heating, and the electrical. And then with the profit sharing provision, it does allow for the city to cover the depreciation expenses and the building maintenance on the shared portions of the building, which are the foyer and the bathrooms. So the staff feels very comfortable with the contract, and after meeting with Monica and her team, we feel very comfortable in their knowledge of the food industry and where they're going. So with that, are there any questions that I can answer at this time?
Chairman, I have one. So does our current, do we still have a current contract with Cameron Burr?
No, we've
so that one's completely expired.
We're in the current process of negotiating some terms of buyout right now.
Okay. So do you see any conflict or potential conflict?
No.
Okay. Perfect.
Not with that.
Thank you.
Just with shoring up some of the issues that remain to be resolved with his abrupt departure, I should say.
Okay.
I have a question.
Greg just informed me that his contract actually is expired at the end of the year. There are still a couple of outstanding items that we're working on him on resolving. So it is a terminated agreement.
Okay.
I'm looking through on item number 12, and it says the tenant shall pay $600 per month plus a profit sharing percentage of 40% of monthly net revenues. Where are net revenues defined?
I think it's just after all of her expenses have been paid. It's just Net revenues. I don't know that there is a definition of it in the contract.
Oh, you're in
there
the contract.
There is or is
there
not?
There is not, that I've seen.
Okay. I think it's important to specify that.
How would you prefer that we specified that?
40% of monthly net revenues.
In the way I understood it, uh-huh. from reading the contract, it was just her expenses minus revenues, whatever the difference was there, 40% of that.
Okay. And it says that shall not include fixed operating costs and wages. So I'm trying to think of what the fixed operating costs are that you'd be talking about.
I would think it would be the food, because that's not a fixed cost. It's fixed in that you pay it every month, but the actual amounts aren't fixed.
So basically just variable costs. Okay.
And then you had mentioned, I know they were ready to go quickly. Do you have a time frame in mind?
I would direct that question to Monica and her team, which I'll give her the mic if she'd like.
What was that, 40%?
We have 40%, but we can negotiate that. Okay, let's see. So that's something that we'll need to discuss. So why don't you guys come up and introduce yourselves?
Hello. I'm Monica. A couple people on my team. This is Jeff, my manager and food partner from Nicholas Foods. Paul. We were pretty flattered to have been approached by Cedar Hills. I was somewhat aware that there was a grill here, but I had not been here, and I was quite impressed with the space specifically. A little bit about us. We've been, next week will be 2 years, operating a deli and grill in Eagle Mountain. That space is primarily an Italian style deli. With a focus on a grill, as well being aware that we're in Utah. Utah's big burgers and fries state, so you won't find many burgers on an Italian deli back east, but we do very well with our burgers there in Eagle Mountain. We have become a destination location. It's not some place you're going to stumble upon. You have to make time to come to us, and we're very pleased to say that that's happening. Our goal with that is I've always wanted to have a little joint in my hometown that was a place where people come. We all know each other. Families come. Community comes. You know, it's a gathering place. Back east, I lived there for about 20 years, and every little town had that. You know, that little local place where people came together. And so we're really seeing that now where we have a lot of regulars. We also are seeing astonishingly 30 to 40% new business each and every month. We're able to track that through our sales. And so we feel very blessed and very excited to have been able to bring our brand to Eagle Mountain, to Utah County. And so I think that we brand align very well with this space. I think we also brand align very well with this demographic. I think it's very similar to a lot of the things that we've already overcome, problems that we've seen we've overcome. Time there in Eagle Mountain, we would have lines out the door, every seat filled, and people waiting. That was some things I had to overcome, learning projections and in a whole different way. Every time I thought I had a handle on, you know, how to order for this store, things would change. And so it's been great. It's been a great learning process. Like I said, it's been almost 2 years. I can speak to the catering aspect. We run a great grill. We run a tight ship there. We're seeing good profits there and great business. But we also have a commissary kitchen that we're doing full catering out of as well. We're able to create a hot lunch program for a local charter school. They weren't beholden to the free and reduced, so we're able to actually go in there working with our partner at Nicholas, finding a very good price point, being able to offer that charter school a hot lunch program, and utilizing their kitchen that they couldn't figure out how to run and make it work, and make it work profitably. So then we made a deal to where we barter then a certain amount of hours a week as commissary space. That's actually, we do on-site from scratch. That's what we're about. It's what we do. We had 1,200 square feet, 300 feet of it was kitchen. And so to do the production of the things that we do on site was really tight in space. So having that commissary space was great. Making our sauces, dressings, roasting our beefs, roasting our chickens, and all the various things that we do that all combines to be Six Sisters Deli and Grill. And
Can I ask a question?
Please.
So if you cater for events here, mm-hmm. is your commissary kitchen, you have access? Is that how you would?
Well, that really is kind of supporting the grill and supporting some of the catering we're doing. This kitchen here is even bigger than that kitchen there. And so this kitchen that you have here at the grill,
three times the volume.
We could handle your big weddings in here. We could handle any of your tournaments. We can handle your concessions. We can handle running the grill and, you know, delivering out to your golfers if they want to call in. We can, you know, shuttle food out to them on the greens. We feel like we're very well staffed. Between Jeff and myself, we have over 50 years of catering experience and restaurant experience combined. We have a third chef on staff. She's 1 year out of chef school, and she is wonderful for organization, and she's done really great things with helping us to organize that catering and that commissary kitchen and that lunch program. So we really have three chefs on board who all have great management experience as well as catering and restaurant experience. And we have a bunch of young men and women who've come to work for us, various places in the community. We have several that have come and just with no skills, zero skills, and they've come in and we've worked with them, and now they could run our store. So we've had some really good success. We call it the success story. I have a second logo on the back of my shirt. I don't know if you can see it. It's a tomato and has a 6 and an S. And if you say success together, success, right? That's what we want to bring to Cedar Hills, the Success Grill at Cedar Hills. We're going to bring you success. We're going to bring success here for your community, for your programs, for your catering, and give something back to the community as well, that people can come here and have a Sunday, or they can come and have a burger, or just come and meet for a birthday party, get together, or whatever, a place where people gather. That's what we do best. We can handle lines out the door. We can handle, you know, we know how to advertise out into the community. We only advertise pinpointedly local. We're in the local basketball program. We're on the local, you know, elementary school musical. We're supporting local businesses. We network locally as much as we can. That's really important to us as far as our products. We work very closely with Nicholas, and they work very closely with local purveyors. So our bread's all local. Our cheeses are all local. We use local bacon. Any way we can use local products and network and support local companies, wherever it makes sense for us, that's what we do. So, Paul, would you like to
Yeah, I just wanted to speak. Is there anybody here who's not familiar with Nicholas, first of all? Haven't seen the trucks on the road.
You're a food supplier?
We're a food supplier, local company, third generation family from immigrants from Greece. Philosophy of Nicholas, you know, we've expanded just this last year to Vegas. We're starting to grow outside, $600 million company, 500 employees. The idea of Nicholas is to create partnerships, and that's what Nicholas was founded on. And so I'm one of four business development specialists that work with Nicholas. I call all the sales reps from basically South Salt Lake to Moab down to Cedar City and everywhere in every nook and cranny. And so my job as a support is Nicholas actually pays my salary to be private restaurant consultants for the customers that are partners with Nicholas. And because we really believe on the partnership side of things, the idea, obviously, is to create that win-win that everyone can, you know, make it. And I was involved in some of the previous folks who were trying to get in and make things work, you know, before Monica even made the decision that she wanted to even consider this opportunity because of the different type of scope that this brings. This isn't a restaurant. It's not a grill. It's not just a catering company. It's not just a food truck. It's a very vast. And so sitting down and going over the contracts and the opportunities, you know, the first thing I was going to do is make sure if it was a good idea, I'd be the first one to tell her don't do it. I've been working closely with Monica for the past couple of years since her inception, and I think they've heard the percentages in the restaurant industry in less than 2 years nationwide. The statistic is 80% of restaurants are gone. And there's a whole slew of reasons, and we won't go into that right now, but the idea is making sure that when you have partners who are going to help you succeed, number one, she's almost to that two-year mark just with this little venture here. And one of the biggest reasons is she listens and she understands how to make things work in the community and to develop the partnerships that are going to make her successful. You know, running a successful P&L, making sure your food costs, your labor costs, and everything is all in order. It's not going to do any good. You can have the best restaurant in here, you know, but if they don't understand the demographics, they don't understand how things are going to work, and also to be able to cater to every little thing, she's not going to be successful. She's not going to be selling. Vice versa. If you guys bring in somebody, you know, I know using this kind of circumstances, the very first thing that comes up is we should put it out to bid. And I can't tell you how many of the hundreds of restaurants I've worked with in these scenarios, I can't tell you how many times I've seen the failure of that only because what happens? Well, are we trying to find the cheapest person here who's going to, you know, make the most money? It really leads to the idea of, do you want the best, do you want the worst, or do you want something in the middle where everyone can succeed? And so Nicholas's commitment to Monica is obviously to help her with the experience that we carry to make sure she can be successful on running food carts and concession stands out there, how to run the golf tournaments. You know, we manage or help manage Vanguard, who's, you know, and we also sponsor and run Web.com, one of the largest tournaments in Utah. So we understand this business. We also understand all the other aspects that she's going to be jumping into and to give her that support. So I wanted to just answer any of the logistical concerns there might be when it comes to contracts. I know one of the figures that came up we could have swore is a 12%, but the idea on the lease to cover the basics and then the share.
Yeah, can I address that real fast?
Yes.
So I don't know where the 12 is, but I was just talking to Charles about the numbers. And it could have been that we are working from a draft contract.
I actually know a little bit, too, because I looked at last year's discussion.
Okay.
And we were talking about 12% of revenue with the previous group that was in here. And then we sometimes switched to 40% of net revenue rather than 12%.
So we're working probably with the hybrid of the two contracts.
Yeah.
However, at 12%, we're still covering our direct costs to run the grill, so the city's not going backwards and subsidizing. And with the shared revenue, we're still getting to the point where the indirect costs of the depreciation of the building are being covered as well.
So were you guys under the impression that it was 12% of gross revenues?
Yeah, and that's what we were prepared to
see that
address.
12% of gross revenues, it comes about the same as 40% of net revenues that we discussed that last time.
When I'm working with Monica, you know, I'm a really big P&L guy. Everything's by percentages. If you have 30% food costs, 20% labor, your fixed expenses plus all your variable, when you run that P&L, a perfect P&L on percentages, it doesn't matter what you make. She can have a $400 day or a $1,000 day, she's going to make money. Vice versa, it's the same concept of franchise. I own franchises, so I understand, you know, my franchises were around 7-8%. I think that's a pretty good average, but with the low lease to help offset, you know, the difficulty of this, the idea is if she even comes close to what she's doing out in Eagle Mountain, which, by the way, in 2 years, I haven't seen in the hundreds of restaurants I've worked with, I haven't seen anybody bring in or buy that much food in such a small space in such a small area. So, again, I wouldn't have even recommended to her to come out in this scenario if, number one, it's going to be a win-win. So, on the math, if she just does close to what she's doing out there, and I think she's going to far surpass that here with the larger opportunities and the larger scale. We're looking at that basic of $600, obviously, every month, and you're going to be averaging between about $2,500 and $3,000 in rent. That's why we put the cap at $3,000, because we also understand, number one, for the space that she's doing and the difficulty of the scenario, $3,000 to $4,000 is a pretty fair rent. But what we want to be able to do is make sure that I have to help her to get through the slow seasons, so we can build that pot, and you guys can average your $2,500 to $3,000 in rent.
Now, I don't want you to say this if it's going to be too confidential of information, but what kind of revenues are you expecting the first few months?
So, and that's part of the deal that we made up. So we want to be able to kind of have an April 1st date as a start date. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a good couple months. Most restaurants, I've worked with one in Beaver, and it takes 4 to 6 months just for the process to get going.
Yeah.
So in order for her to not spend all the money and then open up and she's out, And, you know, you don't have the influx of people coming in. We're proposing that on April 1st is kind of the start date, but allowing her to come in and start ramping up, get out there and market to the schools. There's a lot of opportunity for lunch business. There's a lot of opportunity for the local business, and we know how to market to that. Start building up and working with the club and the catering side of things. That gives her time to start ramping up, get those revenues in, get a cash flow coming in, and then April 1st, she's going to be fine to move forward with revenues.
Well, April 1st being a set date, if we get going ASAP, you know, there's quite a bit of cleaning and different the organization and figuring out how the, you know, how the logistics work. And so, you know, that April 1st date hinges on how quickly we can get started.
Her initial investment alone, just on the food side, is $5,000 to $8,000 just to bring in food. And of course, there's the expense of labor and all that. So she's going to have a significant, you know, beginning dollar amount that she has to invest in. So when we talk partnerships, we want the city and the club to win. But if we help each other, and I don't think you want a scenario that in a few months or less than a year, you're in the same boat and wondering what to do. We really believe we have a good plan to make sure that this is a long term, and you folks are in and really feel like, you know what, this is finally what we had envisioned. And having a company to help her as well, that sees that vision. You know, I was laughing over at Neaters because it reminds me. Did one of you bring in Neaters?
We had a catered thing before you got here.
But well, I laugh at Neaters, and I'll shut up after this. I'm a talker, obviously. The Neaters, the backstory there is obviously they started somewhere somehow, right? It's a Utah company. And Nicholas was with them from day one, from helping, you know, we really developed the front of the house and the back of the house. We helped find the land. We helped build the plans. We helped the structure, train. And to this day, we're still their prime purveyor, prime partner, because they've, look where they are today. And the idea is we all grow together, we all win together, and everybody can profit. So that's what we'd like to present.
Well, I did want to mention that we don't spend tons of money on advertising, but we get lots of free advertising. Before we even opened the store, we had 2,000 likes on our Facebook. We have Instagram, Facebook, we have Google Plus. If you look us up on social media, we have a great social media presence. We have 4.5% on Yelp. We have 4.7 stars on Google, and our I think we have 4+ stars on Facebook. These are the three major people go to. Hey, what are you going to? They'll pick up Yelp. They'll look at Google. They'll look at Facebook. And so in addition to advertising locally, we have a great I have a great team, an admin team that supports us on daily posting and just keeping lots of fluid attention on what we're doing. We do live Facebook feeds and all kinds of things just to continue keeping people, you know, excited for that next best thing. Right now we're running our chocolate dipped strawberry Valentine's campaign, and we sold 10 cases of dipped Galibo strawberries last season, just in you know a month's time, 3 weeks actually, and so we hope to double that this year. That's our goal, and so we do set very clear goals. We really try to attain them. We're very much a team operation, and a tight family, and we're all local, very local, you know, locally based. And so Jeff just lives over the hill in Lehigh. I'm right in Eagle Mountain, and all of our team too, and it will be an opportunity to probably offer 15 to 20 local jobs here just out of this grill, and then many more through the catering. You know, we have a swing shift catering crew too, so minimum probably 15 to 18 jobs right away in the next, you know, over probably the first few months opening. We currently employ 22 people out of our 1250 square foot space now. So
well, thank you so much for being here. I think the count, don't go away, I think okay. Council probably has some questions for you, so go ahead, Council. Fire away.
I'm curious whether the menu that you're planning for this location is going to be identical to the menu that you have at your current location.
It's going to be kind of it's going to be a menu that makes sense. We're not going to bring the whole menu. This isn't a deli space. This is a grill space. And so we're going to bring our top five sellers, absolutely. And we're going to bring our burgers, our fries. I like that this has lots more space for some things that we don't do there. I'd like to do an ice cream menu, shakes and sundaes and fun things like that, fun drinks and, you know, treats. All the home baked goods that we do now, plus an ice cream menu, very focused, heavy, strong burger menu, as well as we do wonderful salads. We make all of our dressings on site. We have a very strong gluten-free understanding. We become a destination location for the gluten-free and the allergy-friendly type menus, so we'll definitely offer some of that. But, you know, food that makes sense for this space. And so it will be sandwiches and salads and burgers and yummy treats and drinks. And
does that mean no lasagna on Tuesdays?
So the lasagna, sadly, has been taken from the menu because I can't even give lasagna away. I don't even know. You heard my feelings bringing that up? No.
Well, he is a Sicilian. So.
Well, we do homemade pasta sheets and homemade marinara and homemade meatball, and we were selling it with a side salad and garlic bread and a drink for $10, and I couldn't give it away.
Oh,
Utah County, well, Eagle Mountain is not a lasagna town, sadly. So that's been replaced by the chicken parm. So,
okay.
Yeah. We're going to bring our meatballs up, though.
You'll have your meatball sandwiches
oh, yeah,
and all that?
For sure. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Dan,
any more questions?
My marinara better than I do now. True story.
Cool.
So.
Thank you.
Mike, questions?
No, I mean, just I'd like to say thank you because the only reason I know about you is I stumbled on you. I was doing work out in Eagle Mountain.
Yeah.
And just so the council knows, the way I found them, I was there on a Saturday, actually. And they had a big local sign that was saying, I don't know if you remember, but you were doing a fundraiser for the young couple that was killed on SR-72 or whatever, SR-92, yeah. Or 72, whatever that
73.
Is. 73. And they donated all the proceeds.
Oh,
they
nice.
Had a huge smoker out.
And whenever, you know, tragedies happen.
And the place was out the door. And so anyway, that's kind of how I stumbled on them.
The only time we bring our smoker out and do barbecue is when we're benefiting a local charity. And so that's what we do when something happens. We bring our smoker out, we line the corner with flags, we bring a DJ, and we do everything we can to bring the community together. And then it's really a pleasure to be able to send a check from the community to somebody in our community in need. And so we felt extremely privileged to be have been involved in a couple of
the only thing I can say
like
on top
that.
Of that is I wish you the best of luck as long as the council agrees. I mean, I think this is the right fit. I hope it is. I've always supported the grill no matter who's been here. So, you know, I'm a golfer too, so I come for snacks and that sort of stuff too.
Great.
But best of luck. I know it's a tough business.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Thanks
Jenny, questions? Anything?
You had me at ice cream. The scouts will agree with me, right? Shakes and ice cream?
Yeah.
Thumbs up?
Yeah.
Come on, scouts. Help me out here.
Ben?
No, you
question.
Should.
Rob?
It'd be fun to run some family home evening events and have some specials for Monday night or, you know, do some things bring families together around ice cream. I love ice cream, too.
A couple
Rob,
quick questions.
Go ahead.
I just want to fire in. Do you guys offer coupons?
So we have a few times we've done a few coupons, so we're doing actually right now it's getting ready to print. We're on the Westlake High School booster card. We always support that. We'd love to do that locally here. We'd love to do a sandwich that is dedicated, named after, affiliated with your local high school, and then, you know, I would love to see a quarter per sandwich or whatever go back to the school. We love doing things like that. Right now we're getting ready to print a cash card. On one side we're offering, with the purchase of a sandwich, you get a free burger and fries, and on the back of it, it's a free kids meal with every parent meal purchase. So we do some local things like that. We haven't run a ton of like Val Pack or any coupons like those.
And I'll just speak to that if you don't mind, because I'm very strongly opinion about that, just because of my experience.
Yeah.
You know, I won't name the restaurant, but it was literally a 5-star rated restaurant run by nationally awarded chefs. And the idea was to offer a restaurant that extremely high, you know, value, great food, blah, blah, blah. And 3 or 4 months after they started using Groupon and Valpak, gone. You know, and I will not, you know, recommend her to be a coupon establishment, but there are many, many, many ways to offer deals and to market to, you know, families looking for opportunities without couponing that are actually a lot more successful. So we will definitely be working on that to make sure that the community feels like they've got a spot where they can get a good value and opportunity.
That's what I think, is that a good value and a good price.
The other question I have is, so this is your first expansion from your original store.
It is.
How much time do you personally plan on spending over here?
I'll probably split my time half and half. I generally work about 80 hours a week. Mm-hmm. I hope to, with Jeff supporting me and hiring some other good people, you know, I hope to be able to do, you know, 25, 30 hours a week myself up here. Jeff is extremely capable. I think once things are running smoothly between the two of us and our third chef, you won't see any gaps in coverage.
And then how many employees do you want to start out with here?
We'll probably start out with 5 or 6 people who are trained to us, who we know, and then start hiring.
Maybe have a couple here at a time.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Shifts, so you'll have 3 or 4 people on site at all times when we're open, and then you'll have your peers.
Have you talked much about the other companies and what has made them kind of not work out here, and what you plan on doing different? Are you very well aware of what has gone well, what hasn't gone well, so you know where to fix the problems of the past,
right.
I guess.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. In the space we're in now, we're actually the 4th food establishment in that location.
Over there or over
in
here?
In Eagle Mountain.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And when we went down there, I had to beg the landlord to give me opportunity to put another food. He said he's putting a dentist's office in there. He's not putting any more food in that space, right? So I showed him my business plan, showed him our capital, showed him my resume, my experience. He gave us the opportunity. We did have to overcome a lot, being an out-of-the-way location. And so I see a very similar pattern here, where I believe that people were possibly inexperienced and undercapitalized. Capital not as much in this location because of the special circumstances here, but I think with the demographic and with getting the community involved, with getting social media on board, I think we've learned some things. And we still have those days where the lines are out, frequently lines are out the door, every seat is filled and people are camping on each other for seats. In the summertime, we bring 10 picnic tables in all along our lawn area because we just don't have the seating capacity in the 1,200 square feet that we have. We'd love to take over that whole building eventually. I don't see that happening immediately, but.
And then the last question might be a little more involved, but if whether it's 12%, we kind of need to, if we're going to vote on something tonight, we kind of need to nail down pretty quick what the actual contract is going to say. Out of it, whether it's 12% or 40%, is it revenue, net revenue? What's involved in this? Yeah. So anyway.
I will sort of, one last thing on that is, I feel like it's going to be a lot easier. I brought this up when we were talking about how you monitor that. So we offered it from the very get-go that, you know, with her Square system that prints out monthly breakdowns of revenues and all the expenses, it's really easy to see with turning into a check. Here's our printout of sales. Here's your 12%. Done. It maybe works just like a franchise fee, you know, in that regard. But again, the idea for my recommendation, so she is successful and can make it through the hard months, having that $3,000 cap, just bank on getting $2,500 to $3,000 on average anyway. And if there's a cap, who cares if it's 40 to 12, whatever is easiest, this line, I personally think just call it a 12% revenue, just like a franchise fee, make it easy.
You, I like that. Are you okay with that?
Love it.
Okay, yeah. All right. Thank you so much for being here.
I've got one more question.
Okay, hold on. One more question. Make it quick.
Yeah, this is a quick question. It's two parts. So the first part is for Chandler. I believe we're not giving them an exclusive catering rights to the visitor.
No.
So then my question for you is, are you prepared to be really aggressive
Absolutely. In
going after those catering deals? Because that's, I think, what sunk some previous tenants.
Yeah.
Thank you, Scouts.
Yeah, I actually spoke with Gretchen too, to put a plan in place. Anytime that she's got somebody coming in for a walkthrough, being in communication with her, if either be present for that walkthrough or having a set tasting tray that we send, just a little complimentary, couple of cannoli, couple of chocolate chip strawberries, maybe a couple of finger sandwiches that she can take into that meeting and say, and by the way, we do have in-house catering. You're not bound to use it, but here is their brochure. Here's a little sample of what they do, and you know, absolutely on board with accompanying her in any of those that she thinks might be, you know. And as far as any of the other, what's that? Yeah, any of the other city or luncheon or any of those things, you know, they mentioned us that they would give us an opportunity to bid on those. We'll bid competitively and we'll be very much involved in that. And like Jeff just mentioned, you know, we do make everything from scratch and on site, and not very many people do that anymore.
Okay, so thanks for being here. Have a seat.
Pleasure.
We'll get to a motion here in just a minute.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Chandler, go right ahead.
No, the last thing I need to just clarify is, based on our last conversation, $600 per month plus a profit sharing revenue of 12% of monthly revenues is what?
And put in the word gross revenues.
Gross revenues. Okay, I have that written down. I just wanted to clarify. It was the last thing I needed to clarify.
Okay. So,
with the, and then it goes on to, and not to exceed a monthly payment of $3,000.
Okay, Council, you've heard a great presentation. You've asked questions. Someone comfortable making a motion at this point?
I'll make the motion.
Go ahead.
Since I found him. No. I'm not taking bread. I really hope they succeed. I really, really do. I think I'm excited. So I oh wait, there's no motion.
It says on the agenda that it's a no motion necessary, discussion item only, but it was noticed as a review action.
Action item. Okay. Yeah. So I make a motion that we approve Sisters Deli and Grill as the what do we call them? The
I think we just approved
tenants.
Approve the concession agreement.
Oh, the concession holders for this recreation center, with the modifications that Mr. Crowley asked, with the contract being 12% of gross, with a cap of $3,000 per month.
Okay.
And $600 a month.
And a $600, yeah, whatever.
All right. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Mr. Crowley seconded it. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
We look forward to tasting your food. Thanks. Okay, let's move back to item number 8, which is an action item on the official zoning map for the city of Cedar Hills. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
As discussed in the work session, this map is simply identifying the changes that have been made to the zones throughout the city, and most notably moving some publicly owned facilities into the public facility zone and moving portions of the R115,000 residential zone R120,000 zone into the R115,000 zone. These aren't changes that are being approved tonight. They've already been approved. This map just reflects those changes. Additionally, one thing I failed to mention in the work session but is of note is that this map does show the current boundary of Cedar Hills. I know that's always in flux, it seems like, but it does incorporate the Hart's property and the most recent boundary adjustments along 4000 West that were approved. Are there any questions?
Excellent presentation.
Concise.
Was there a question there, Rob?
It just went a little too fast for me. What are we doing?
We're just approving the map.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It's just saying that this map, basically the vote is saying that this map reflects those changes that have already been made. We're not adopting any changes to the current zone. The zones have already been changed. This map just reflects those changes and it becomes part of the city code as the official zoning map.
Okay. Someone like to make a motion?
I'll move that we adopt the proposed zoning map dated January 2017 as the official zoning map for the city of Cedar Hills.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mrs. Reese seconded it. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to our last action item, which is a resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the official fees, bonds, and fines schedule of the City of Cedar Hills. Mr. Mogg.
Yes, Mayor.
Good to
Council.
See you.
Thank you. The Building Department completed an audit of outstanding permit requests, and we found that we had permits that have expired and would not be issued. They had been approved, plan review is completed, and we had paid our contractor for the services of doing that plan review. Consequently, our plan review deposit is currently at $300, and that was insufficient to cover the amount that we remitted to our contractor. We showed a loss of funds at that time. We feel that's unnecessary, and so we're presenting the information to the council to review and determine whether you'd like to adjust that plan review deposit amount that would more substantially cover the actual cost that we remit to our contractor. There's an included proposed fee schedule. This is based off of the square footage of the dwelling itself, not including the garage, which we feel would adequately provide the funds for the cost of the plan review.
So how does this schedule jive with other cities' schedules?
They're all different.
Are we charging more? Are we charging less?
This won't change the cost of the plan review fee. They'll remain the same. All this would do is change when that fee is collected. They would pay up front, so if they failed to pick up their permit, then they would have paid for the services that they've requested.
So what it is, Jeff, is, and I might be wrong, but they pay up front rather than we do the work, and then if they pick it up, then they pay, but sometimes they won't pick their stuff up. Is that right?
That's correct.
But we're still out that money because we had to pay for the review. Okay.
That's correct.
That sounds
it's rare, but it does happen.
That sounds like a reasonable thing to do.
Absolutely.
In the case, two cases you're mentioning here, did they go to collections? Is there a way to still try and...
We don't have the legal language for our permit applications to go that route. We have contacted them, and there have been others, and we have other people that have come in and paid for the plan review and then not utilized the permit. But these two, they're far expired, and we've contacted them a number of times, and they've moved on to other plans. And so, no, they have not.
Okay. Good presentation. Someone from the council like to make a motion?
A couple questions here.
Go ahead. Yes.
This is up my alley. So my initial response is, I have a couple questions. My initial response is, I think there's too many categories. I think it should be like from 1,000 to like 2,500, then like 2,500 to 5,000. I think it's getting complicated to figure out how many square feet it is. That's my personal opinion.
The square footage will be required on each plan that we accept in the future so that the person at the front desk doesn't have to calculate it. They'll look at the plan. It'll state what the total square footage is, and then look at the chart. We did make a large number of categories, which is unusual, in the hopes that we wouldn't be charging people in the 3,000 square footage range for a 5,000 square footage cost, and then we would be charging them more than what the plan review would cost the city. And that's the reason why there's that many categories.
I mean, I'm just looking at a typical house I just submitted. Whereas I would have paid $300 for a plan check review. And now I'm going to pay $2,000 more. I'm going to pay $2,300 on a 5,000 square foot plan. That's probably the highest in the valley. I'm just telling you that.
That would not surprise me. I haven't checked everywhere, but we use the ICC plan review costs as published, and we don't factor like some communities do, which would increase that cost. But this would not change what that would have cost either way. I mean, our
right now, I understand that, because I misunderstood that initially earlier when I was looking at this thing. But I've got the second concern before I go back is that, for instance, does this include basements?
Yes, Cedar Hills charges for full square footage as per ICC direction.
See, because I think this is out of whack. If someone comes in for a 1,200 square foot basement to for a plan review, it's generally a one-page thing. I mean, it's not. If it was 1,200 square feet, you'd pay $800 for the plan review. I don't care. If Sunrise is charging $800 to review a one-page basement plan, they're charging way too much.
Sunrise.
And on top of that, the whole permit isn't even that much.
Now, the plan review fee is 65% of the building permit fee, and Sunrise collects 65% of the 65%. And so, we use the other portion of that to cover our office expenses.
So, like, but basements are valued at a much lesser value, correct?
No, not in Cedar Hills. Some jurisdictions they are. The ICC and the way it's been collected for the past since 1999 is that they collect for the total square footage at the ICC published rate without a factor. And the previous council addressed that in that they would like that paid up front, so when people finish their basement, they don't have to come up with another plan review or a permit fee. And then we would have.
But that wasn't adopted, is that right?
It was.
It was, Mike. So, for instance, my basement's not finished. If we get it finished, the contractor already paid that 10 years ago when we moved in. I don't have to pay.
When did that go in place? Because I pulled a basement permit and I paid like $600 for half the basement.
It would have been. There was. Partially 1999. By 2001, they was doing it really consistent. So we pull the old permits and check whether they were paid.
This house wasn't built till 2003, and I still paid $600 for half a basement permit.
There is two considerations. One is, in order for that to be in effect, they have to build the original floor plan of the. The original construction floor plan, so we don't have to do another plan review. If they make any changes, then obviously we need to do another plan review, and so there's additional fees. And typically we don't charge for the permit, we just charge.
Anything after 2000, was it technically you do not have to go get a permit? Is that what you're saying?
No, you have to get a permit, and there's usually a renewal fee for the permit, but there is not a building permit fee. And if they build it exactly the same as the original plan that was approved, then there's no plan review fee either.
Okay. Maybe there's some disconnect there from my personal experience as well. So that's I like that. But here's my concern is that if the fee gets too exorbitant, you know, that to permit their basement, you'll find, and I'm in the business, people will say, I'm not going to get a permit then.
Correct.
And I say, that's your responsibility. I would encourage you to get a permit, but I can't make them to get a permit.
And that's what a previous council addressed. They was concerned with that. That's why they charged the contractor up front for the building of the home. So now the homeowner doesn't have to go through that dilemma. They can submit a permit, and it's usually about $159, I think, by the time they do a renewal and an inspection, and that would be to finish their basement. So
I think
the downside is they
collected. I think that's fair. I just don't know what happened on that one. I just did, but I think that's the most fair. It really is, because then it was paid for up front, and people already have it. So
the downside is that the city collected the revenue and has expended those, and so now we're operating the building department without the revenue.
Exactly right. You're still paying the inspection fees outside when you're not collecting any revenue.
Correct.
But Jeff, you mentioned earlier, and I just want to be clear on this, you said you're not increasing the fee amount, you're just collecting it up front.
Correct.
So no resident's going to come to us now and say, why am I being charged more than I was a month ago?
That's correct.
Okay.
The majority of the permits will remain the same because we left the $300 for incidental permits such as decks, pools, solar installations, et cetera, is still the $300.
Okay. Council, do you have any more questions? If not, I'll take a motion.
I move that we approve resolution number 2-7-2017A. We got eight. A resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the official fees, bonds, and fine schedule of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Bailey seconds. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
It's difficult, but aye.
Aye. Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item number 11, which is a discussion on the family festival. And I'm not sure.
I think it's a combination.
How this was put on the agenda. Let's go there. Who's presenting?
Me and Greg.
Okay.
So if you guys had a chance to read the memo, it pretty much says it all. We've had, I think we're on our second carnival company. The first one that we were dealing with, you guys saw kind of what happened there. It didn't go well. And so now we have a new carnival company, but we're starting to have the same issue, which is they're growing and becoming more popular throughout the state, and we're a small city, and so we're not a high priority for them. And they've already, they have committed to some dates, but they have let us know that they're not going to bring the big rides like they did last year. So we're kind of ending up where we did with the last carnival company, where we'll have a lot of the kiddie rides, but not some of the bigger ones. So one of the things that we discussed in our meeting with the chairs, with Jerianne and Rob, they were wanting some feedback from the council on if the council would be interested in approaching Highland and Alpine to see if, since they don't do carnivals for their festivals in the year, if we would be interested in combining with the three cities together to do a carnival, so that way we are more attractive to these carnival companies who are looking for events where they have quite a few people coming, as opposed to just a small city like ours. Jerianne's pretty concerned. We have a three-year contract with them, which will be up next year. She's pretty concerned that after that we will struggle to get any carnival company if we don't have a bigger pull.
Okay. Are they talking still having it in our location?
No, actually, it would have to be something that makes sense for all three cities. There's nothing set in stone yet. There was some discussion of maybe the area just north of Lone Peak High School, where it's easy for all three cities to get to, plus it's very noticeable. People are going to drive by it and see it, and that will also draw attention to it. There was some discussion of still having the Cedar Hills Family Festival, maybe the Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday, and then doing the carnival in conjunction with the three cities on Friday, Saturday. Really, we're just kind of throwing ideas out right now, but the Family Festival Committee needs direction from the council on moving forward, knowing that our carnival's not going to be very big this year, and we're just going to keep struggling because we're a very small city. So if we want to still do a carnival, we can go back down to a smaller family festival without doing the carnival. We seem to want residents who want a carnival, and so if we want to continue to do something bigger like we did last year and potentially maybe even bigger than that, it probably makes sense to see if there's any interest with Alpine and Highland in joining forces.
So I don't see a problem with doing that, but if the residents really liked it that much, they'd show up in greater numbers. So I think that the Family Festival Committee should be prepared to make the hard decision of maybe there's not a carnival.
Do we know what our attendance numbers look like for the carnival over the years?
I can get those. I'm sure. I mean, we do have those documented. And we sell out our pre-sale passes. And so I don't think it's that our residents aren't showing up. It's just we don't have as many residents as most other cities. And so that's a struggle. I mean, we have good participation for a city of our size.
And do we know if our residents are okay with a carnival that mostly caters to younger kids and not so much to teens?
We had that before, and we had a lot of complaints that there wasn't anything for the older kids to do. And a lot of people were upset that they spent money on wristbands and mm-hmm. felt like their older kids didn't have anything that was applicable to them. Sure. The other option, I mean, Pleasant Grove's not a ton bigger than us. I mean, they are bigger than us. They use City
Four
of Fun.
Bigger than us.
But they also charge a lot more than we do. And that was the other complaint we heard from our residents is, I think Pleasant Grove's is $25 a wristband.
Theirs is a ticket based.
Oh, it's ticket based, yeah.
You're paying tickets, and it's like $1 per ticket, and then 4 tickets per ride. It's expensive.
Yeah, I think Jerianne had said that City of Fun was like $25 as the cheapest, and ours have been closer to the $16 to $18 for the entire week. And that was the other complaint that we heard from residents is that once you get into that $25 per person range, it's too expensive for a family of, you know, if you've got 4 kids and you 2 adults, it's the prices them out. So it's just the Valley Festival is trying to continue to do what we've done because residents seem to like it, but we're just having a struggle getting a carnival company who's interested. So they wanted direction from the council on, do you want a smaller family festival with no carnival? do you want to just charge a lot more money and you'll see fewer residents coming but still have the carnival, or are you interested in seeing if Highland and Alpine are interested in combining forces? Because they do not currently do a carnival.
Do we have a date for that? Could it be in conjunction with us or not?
Well, this year we're fine. We're going to have a smaller carnival, but we've already set our dates for this year. They're talking about moving forward in the future. So, no, I mean, we would have to, if Highland and Alpine were interested in doing that, then obviously there would have to be a new committee formed that had residents from all three cities, and they would have to decide together on dates that work for the three cities combined. And I don't even know if Alpine and Highland will be interested. We just thought it would be something that we can approach because they have smaller festivals than we do, and they currently don't have a carnival of any kind.
I think that would be a good idea to ask them.
The hard thing is that we all have our different dates when we have our city activities, so it'd be hard to get it in conjunction with all of our city activities that we have, city days that we have.
That's what I'm saying. You'd have to have a new committee that have representation from all three cities.
And it'd have to be a different date, necessarily be different date for some cities than the rest of their city activities. So I'd be surprised if that worked out, but I'd be totally fine with it getting smaller and not having the carnival, because my favorite part is the other part of it anyway. Personally, that's how I feel.
So do you not want them to approach the other two cities?
Oh, I don't mind if they do, if the other cities wanted to. I'm just skeptical that it would work out. But if it didn't, I wouldn't be upset because I do like the other part better.
Okay.
I suggest that we contact the other cities and see what they say.
Okay.
You guys?
Thoughts from anybody else?
I'm okay with that too. We're not making a commitment right now.
Nope.
I really value having the carnival in our own park. It really brings the community together. We have the parade, and then people just immediately go into the park. I'm okay if it's a smaller carnival in the sense that maybe it caters to little kids. I'm all right with that. Maybe we find some other activity for teens. It's not a carnival-based activity for them to do. I like having it in our city.
I agree with that. Will they charge us less since they're not giving us the, you know, we would lose a significant amount of revenue from the older kids?
No, they are not charging us less.
They won't charge us less.
And we don't make any revenue at all anyway. The carnival company keeps all the revenue for the carnival.
And they won't charge less for that?
Okay. No.
Okay. Mike, do you have any questions?
No, I agree. I think we should try with Highland and Alpine. But
Greg, Ben, did you want to add?
Don't hold a lot of hope.
No,
for
I,
it, but
I concur with these guys.
Greg, did you want to add anything to the family festival discussion, carnival?
I'm not sure what you covered already.
Just what we discussed, the three options, which was combining with the team, if the other two cities were interested in combining, having either no carnival or a much smaller carnival, or having much higher prices to cover a bigger carnival.
You covered the issues why.
Yes.
Just a quick question. Who? I think Jenny would be a great PR person to handle the Highland and Alpine connections. I don't know. Do you have connections with them?
Yeah. Well, and I was, if the council's fine with it, then it would be probably myself and Jerry Ann and Greg that would work together to approach those cities because we work with the people who do their festivals at the other cities. There's actually an email chain that has been going on for the couple of years with the festival chairs from multiple communities in Utah County where they bounce ideas off each other and ask for those. So yeah, those connections are there.
Okay.
I think that'd be great.
Okay. I think you were just railroaded into being the connection there, Jenny.
No, that's my job. Is
all right. Okay, let's
sorry.
Let's move on.
What if you propose rotating the site each year, so Cedar Hills got once every 3 years?
Whatever you want to
do. Yeah, I mean, we can. I think it's like I said, it's just very high preliminary discussions right now, and those three cities. Those are all things that we'd want to for sure talk about.
You'll come back to the council, make a presentation. I know. Okay. Let's move on to item number 12, which is a discussion on Highland Gardens water connection. So I'm glad you're here, Jeff. You and I have been through these discussions. Why don't you proceed?
Mayor and Council, the owner of Highland Gardens was approached by the American Fork City Fire Department. They had recognized that the business had evolved from an agricultural business to an assembly business with the receptions, et cetera, that they was having, and they required Highland Gardens to install a sprinkler system for fire suppression and also a fire hydrant. American Fork City didn't have any way to provide that water, and the owner approached Cedar Hills with permit authorization to or request authorizing them to connect to Cedar Hills' water line. That permit was reviewed and approved. The information was discussed with American Fork, Public Works, Building Department, Fire Department, and everybody agreed that that was the approved plans. They moved forward with the installation, installing the water line. However, they did not install the required meter, flow meter, and the backflow protection to our system. And the owner is hesitant to do that because of the cost. It's an expensive meter because it has to be rated for fire flow in an emergency. And at this time, his permit had expired. We notified him that it had expired and that he had actually turned our water into his property without authorization, and that we was going to, we actually did shut that water off and notify American Fork City that he was no longer protected for fire suppression. He made a request that we extend his permit while he works out what type of devices that he would use to put in there to meter and protect our water system. And at that time, at this time, that's where we're at. He has a permit extension that will expire in April, at which time, if he isn't in compliance with the city codes and the approved plans, then we intend to shut that water off again. And I think all entities are aware of that situation.
Is there any risk of backflow?
Pardon?
Is there any risk of backflow into culinary water?
There is. There is.
How are we going to mitigate that so we don't have any issues that could go wrong?
I mean, there is a concern at this point. We've evaluated it. One of the issues is that we do provide similar systems to our own retail businesses without the backflow device on there. But they are city-maintained and city-managed, and we have business licenses with those businesses. We have authorization to be on the property. Where this is in a separate jurisdiction, we don't have any of those means to protect our system or to, I mean, all we can do is turn the water on or turn the water off because it's outside of our jurisdiction.
Off this new connection, they're not using water, right, at this point? They're just,
correct.
This is all in fire protection water?
It is. We don't bill them for water. Billing goes through American Fork City, and we settle up uses, and that's one of the reasons we need meters. They meter everything we get from them, and we want them to meter everything they get from us so that we can make an accurate adjustment at the end of the year.
Seems logical to me. I don't know why they can't put in what we request.
Well, and American Fork departments have reviewed it, and they're in agreement that it's reasonable and that it is meeting the state water protection guidelines for both metering, which is required, and backflow protection of the culinary water system.
So staff has made a recommendation that we require, not ask, we require that Mr. Stratton put a backflow meter, backflow valve, and a meter on the fire suppression system that is going to be completed at Highland Gardens. Mr. Stratton is a very nice man. He's going to come here and ask the council to ignore what staff's recommending and approve his request to hook up. So that's the issue that you have to consider.
But we can't, I mean, that's a horrible precedent to violate our own ordinances.
I'm not sure there's an ordinance, but we definitely have a recommendation from staff who's following state recommendations.
He's got all the ordinances listed here, city ordinances.
We do have ordinances requiring that. And his question is why we don't require that to our business district within our own jurisdiction.
And the answer to that?
Because there are properties where this is not ours. This is American Forks.
Correct. And we maintain the hydrants. We maintain the system, and we don't put them on any of our other hydrants within the city. But when the water leaves our jurisdiction and we no longer have control over the hydrant, the system, the inspections, the business licensing, then we need to create a boundary between the systems. And
so these ordinances that you list, they specifically state they only apply to locations outside of our jurisdiction?
No, they require to haul laterals going through a private property.
Even for businesses in Cedar Hills?
Yes, but...
So are we violating ordinances by not requiring our businesses to do it?
We're not, because they are the city's fire lines.
I see. Okay.
So we have like an easement through there in order. It's a utility easement, and they are our hydrants, and we maintain them and maintain the system.
Jeff, does Highland Gardens have a hydrant fed by our water on their property?
Currently, yes. That's what this request was
for. So the other thing, Council and Mayor, is unfortunately water, taking water that you haven't paid for out of a hydrant is a very real, it's super easy to do. All you do is screw off the caps, hook your hose up, and turn on the valve. Anybody can do it. I know they make these special tools, but anybody can do it at any time. And it's very, it happens all the time. I can drive around during the summer, and I see hoses and all that from contractors and all that, and they're taking water left and right. I'm not saying that Highland Gardens would, but if it's not metered and you can get free water and nobody's really double checking on you, you know, that just opens another avenue. Like I said, I'm not saying that that would happen, but it's very possible that it could.
Jeff, so AF City's Public Works Department would have the same requirements that we would, right?
Correct. That's my understanding.
And so it's no different if it was in their jurisdiction or our jurisdiction. City AF is backing us, correct, on this?
Yes, they have their city.
It's just Mr. Stratton that doesn't want to put it in.
Water department has agreed that this is the correct procedure.
How much do you think it costs for him to do what he needs to do? Just a wild guess.
We priced the meter that we suggested, and it's $7,300 plus the installation, which wouldn't have been near as costly if he had done it while he's installing the pipeline, but now he'd have to start over on that, splice into it. But
they're a little extra. They're a little pricey because they have to be listed. Because on a fire suppression system, you can't have something that could possibly fail. So these are like
top of the line,
because if they fail, then it shuts the water down, the fire suppression gets shut down, and the building burns down.
Councilman Bailey did bring up a point with the being on a fire line. One is that they do have access to unmetered water if we don't put a meter on it, but the other concern is that if they don't use the water sits in the pipe and becomes stagnant, and when we have a negative pressure on our line, it sucks that stagnant polluted water back into our drinking water system, and that's what we need.
Which hence is why you go and test your meters every once in a while, right?
That's why you flush them. Flush meters if they're, and this is a dead end meter, which is different than a meter line that's circulating.
Right.
So we do have concern with that, a big concern with that.
Okay. So if anyone needs any further update before Highland Gardens comes to visit us, then Jeff is a good resource to go to.
Is there any reason why he wasn't here tonight? I'm just curious. I'd like to hear his
He wasn't scheduled.
Jeff's not able to make the next meeting, so we wanted Jeff to give his presentation prior to Mr. Stratton giving his. So that's
just so that you're ready for the discussion.
All right.
Okay, let's move on.
Thanks, Jeff.
Item number 13 is a discussion on short-term rentals.
Oh, really?
Mr. Goodwin?
It just died.
This item was brought about by Councilmember Reese, concerns with current.
Zapala.
Was it Zapala? Excuse me. With current proposed legislation. And let me just add as a side note that there's a number of bills that city staff is tracking as they affect the city of Cedar Hills in one way or another. So we'll be bringing probably a few of these to you for a discussion. They're on a wide variety of topics. So if there's a bill that is of particular interest to you that you feel might negatively or positively affect the city, please let us know so that we can do what we can, do the research necessary to bring it before you. On this bill, it seems to allow, the way that I read the proposal, is it allows short-term rentals, such as Airbnbs, to be in the city. And if I am being honest, I'm not a fan of this bill in that let me just read some of it. It defines a short-term rental as a rental residential unit or any portion of a residential unit that the owner of record or the lessee of the residential unit offers for occupancy for fewer than 30 consecutive days. So the way that they've defined short-term rental, it's either the owner of record or a renter. So a couple of years ago, we passed rental business licenses. So homeowners that then rent out their properties, we required them to get business licenses, if you remember. The reason that we did that was we were having so many issues with zoning violations where the homes weren't being kept up to city code, where there was trash in the yard, where there was broken windows, where there was a lot of problems, and parking was one of the major concerns. The way that this bill is written right now, it seems to me, would exacerbate that problem where a renter could then sublet out portions of their house to people needing short-term rentals, which would then really cause a problem I see with parking, with the quality of neighborhoods. So I'm a bit concerned about the way that this bill is as it is written right now.
So where do you see that? Because I'm looking at the bill right now, and it specifically says it has to be an owner-occupied short-term rental.
Look at it's 109A5035. That's when you're looking at?
I'm looking at HB.
I don't have the House bill here.
253, which is.
Was it the one there? Are you looking at the one that's in the packet?
No, I'm looking on ULCT's website, so they've got a link to all of the bills.
So look under 1C.
Short-term rental means a residential unit or any portion of a residential unit that the owner of record or the lessee of the residential unit offers for occupancy for fewer than 30 consecutive days. And then it goes through a different few things from there.
But then, so in 1A it says owner-occupied short-term rental means single-family private property.
So that they have three definitions there. There's owner-occupied short-term rental. Residential unit means a residential structure or any portion of a residential structure that is occupied as a residence. And then they have the next definition is short-term rental, and they allow for, looks like, both owner-occupied, owner of record, and lessee.
So then it says on 3, it says a legislative body may not enact or enforce an ordinance that prohibits a person from listing, offering, or renting an owner-occupied short-term rental.
Look at 2B above that. Or 2A. Notwithstanding section da-da-da, a legislative body may not enact or enforce an ordinance that prohibits a person from listing or offering a short-term rental on a short-term rental website.
So the short-term rental is the
2A is really broad.
Yeah. So I have some concerns with the way that this bill is written and how it affects the city. We only have, as it currently stands, I think, 2, maybe 3 Airbnbs in the city, and I don't know how often they get used, to be quite honest. But there is one that has been problematic because of parking.
So the proponents of this bill argue you should just regulate the nuisances like the parking and the party houses and disturbances, but otherwise let everything go.
Right, but when is the parking occurring? It's at night. When is the party house occurring? It's at night. We don't have code enforcement at night. We have police presence.
But they don't enforce.
But they're not enforcing parking. So this drastically changes the way that we enforce nuisances in the city. So that's just one of the problems I see with the bill.
I think there are a lot of residents who would prefer that their neighborhoods aren't turned into short-term rental neighborhoods.
That's actually the sentiment I hear a lot.
And that conflicts with a smaller group of people who say, I should just be able to do whatever I want with my property and I want to rent it out. Mm-hmm. And there's some legitimate stories of people who say, well, you know, I'm a widow and so this is my only way to make income. and you feel sorry for people in that situation, but that conflicts with their neighbors who just don't want that kind of activity.
So that's hard. That's a hard one.
It is
the whole property rights thing, and we still don't have any accessory apartments on record, right?
No, they don't exist. But to be fair, my issue with this is the renters subletting out portions of their home. We passed the rental code because of the issues with renter with we were having with so many renters and the properties just not being maintained to their to city code. So if you let renters rent out, it just seems to me that the problem is going to be very bad in some cases. And those people aren't the property owners in this case.
Yeah, finding out who to point the finger at when things go wrong will be difficult if
it is.
Then a renter could rent to a renter to a renter to a renter.
So to me there is actually a difference between the owner occupied portion and the renter occupied portion of this, and I have a much more heartburn on the latter.
So maybe that's the feedback we give back to you, LCT.
Well, I would give them that feedback, and I would also give them just the general feedback of this: the state should not legislate to cities how we run our affairs.
I think that's the bigger issue.
It should be up to us to decide these kinds of issues and what works for our residents.
I think that this is the type of issue that greatly affects the quality of life in the community.
Absolutely.
And that should be left up to the municipality to decide.
Right now, this is all being pushed by folks at Libertas who have an agenda that property rights is their most important thing, in fact, probably the only thing they really care about. And so they're going to push it from the top down because that's how they feel like they're going to win.
The Libertas Institute was not a fan of the rental business license amendment or ordinance that we passed. In fact, on their website, they compared it to communist Russia.
Yes.
So that's where that group's coming from. And I understand that, and I understand the need for balancing property rights versus the larger community goal.
There is no balance in their minds.
Well, there is no balance in their minds. And I see this as an issue for the community at large. That's the way I kind of view that as staff.
Okay. The lead right now is opposing this bill. However, I'm being told that the bill has legs. So if I hear something, I will let you know.
So, and like I said, if there are legislative issues that you feel like staff should look into, please let us know. We're happy to do so.
Next item, 14, discussion on Canyon Road. You staying up there, Chandler?
Yeah.
There wasn't a memo made for this because it's been on the agenda so many times. But the way I understand current situation with Canyon Road is that they are designing the improvements based on their agreement with Pleasant Grove. Cedar Hills, as it currently stands, has not made an agreement with the county and with MAG about fixing Canyon Road because there's been a lot of disagreement on who takes ownership of the road in the future. And I also understand that this council is very concerned about the quality of the improvements, namely addressing the issues that caused the road to rapidly deteriorate, which are the drainage issues. So in order for that road to be maintained correctly, we feel that there needs to be some elements of curb and gutter along the portions in order for it to drain properly and so that the road doesn't degrade at such a high rate.
So can I take over since I
asked
for this item?
Please do. This is your item.
So after we had that joint meeting with Pleasant Grove and the county commissioners, Commissioner Lee's office reached out to me and stated that Commissioner Lee was interested in speaking with me regarding Canyon Road. So I went to a meeting at his office. I invited Mr. Bunker, who was not able to make it, Mayor Geege and council members of Paula, to join me. And we had a discussion with Commissioner Lee, again, about why our situation is different from the situation with Pleasant Grove. The big one for me is that Pleasant Grove owned a portion of North County Boulevard, and they gave that to the state knowing that in exchange they were going to take their portion of Canyon Road, where Cedar Hills was not involved in that negotiation at all, and we did not own any part of North County Boulevard. So where it's a swap with Pleasant Grove, where they gave up one street and are taking on another, that's not our situation. And I don't think Commissioner Lee was aware of that prior to that joint meeting that we had. So he seemed open to having a separate agreement with Cedar Hills, even though he's taking some heat from some Pleasant Grove officials. So my recommendation to Commissioner Lee was that they take the entire amount of MAG money that's available and do all the repairs that have already been discussed, the repairs and the upgrades that have already been discussed that were part of the, that is it $9.3 million, that Cedar Hills would not take ownership of the road because, again, we never gave up anything, and this was not an agreement that we were ever party to, but that because we were asking for some things that were above and beyond what the county would normally do, mainly the drainage and the curb and gutter, that Cedar Hills would be responsible for the ongoing maintenance of only those items that were above and beyond what they would do for a county road. And then David had said that he thought that the city could also probably help with some pothole repair and striping. But I felt that they should still be responsible ongoing for snow plow, for snow removal, for the mill and overlays, for all of the big items because it's their road and it's going to continue to be their road. So he seemed open to discussing that with the commissioners, but before he went back and discussed that with them, I wanted to bring it back to you guys to find out if that was something that we could agree on, because if our council can't agree on it, then it's a waste of his time to ask the commissioner. So again, it's the county maintaining ownership. It's the county being responsible for their own upgrades and repairs and everything. The only thing that we would be responsible for would be maintaining those upgrades that they're not going to install in the road as is, which are drainage and curb and gutter.
Now, just as a matter of clarification, because there is a bit of jurisdictional confusion going down Canyon Road. Would they be putting, are you proposing curb gutter along the entirety of it?
I don't think that the proposal included curb and gutter on the entirety.
Well,
and so the
in the Pleasant Grove portions that are north of Murdoch Canal, would they be fronted with curb gutter?
Well, so it would be whatever was that. So there was a proposal that was put together that's where the $9.3 million came from, right? Mm. That I'm talking about just that proposal that was already discussed.
Yeah, and so I think the question is, if whatever gets built happens to have some curb and gutter that's in,
that's Pleasant, in our side.
That's a Pleasant Grove home.
Oh.
We're not going to agree to pay for that, I would assume.
Yeah,
the
installation
or the maintenance?
The maintenance.
Oh, the maintenance.
The frontage on Canyon Road is probably close to 50-50 Pleasant Grove, Cedar Hills, along Cedar Hills Drive. Cedar Hills Drive to Murdoch Canal.
Yeah.
So if there's curb gutter along the entirety of it, and we've agreed to maintain that, we would maybe be maintaining portions of curb gutter that are in Pleasant Grove.
So maybe then what
But
we
if it's
say,
not there, then it would still probably create drainage problems for us. So it's kind of a catch-22.
Pleasant Grove's not going to go back and agree to take anything north of the...
So we may end up
take
that curb gutter.
But what if you're saying is that it fixes, it improves the integrity of the road for our portion still,
yes.
And then I think it's worth it if it's going to make that road safer for the rest of...
Yeah, well, if portions of the drainage aren't addressed, then we're still going to have the same issues we're having today,
right,
on those portions, but they're going to be north of Murdoch Canal, so
right,
it's going to be our problem.
And I don't know if David gave you the information, but he felt like us maintaining just the upgrades that the county's not going to do, he didn't think that was going to be...
No, I've spoke with Jeff about it, and we feel pretty good about that agreement.
But I said to him, I still said to him then, no snow plow. I mean, we can't handle plowing that road. So it was just, like I said, maintaining the things that we have, the extras, and then maybe some pothole and striping.
Curb gutter, and then storm drain maintenance.
That would be the system. And we would never take ownership.
Yes.
So I just need feedback from the council if that's something
Is there a reason why we decided to talk about this before, according to our resolution we just said, let them do what they're going to do with the road? Just what advantage is there for us meeting with them
Because
MAG money?
Because we want to get some of that MAG money used in Cedar Hills.
Otherwise, it's just going to all the Pleasant Grove. So they are in the process of designing it, with Pleasant Grove getting the upgrades and we just getting the mill and fill. And that's what they will do, and if that's what the council's fine with, then I won't push it anymore. But Commissioner Lee was open to having a separate agreement with us where we got some of those upgrades that we felt were important,
so,
at least having those discussions.
So besides the mill and grill, if we talk to them, what would they use the MAG money for?
They wouldn't accept all of it. They would just take the portion that they need to do the upgrades in Pleasant Grove and reject the rest and give it back to MAG.
No, if we work with them, what are they going to buy besides the mill and upgrade that they wouldn't if we didn't work on
curb gutter and drainage, storm drain facilities?
So they would use it to do a curb and gutter on our end without us having to pay for it. All we have to do is maintain it.
Right.
Right.
That's my proposal to them, yes, because the money's coming from MAG to do those upgrades.
And we have residents on that road
that have significant drainage issues on their property?
If you go down the road anytime you rain, there's we call them the duck ponds because they're quite significant.
Yeah. So what kind of cost would have we figured out about how much it would cost us to maintain those year to year?
Yeah, David had those numbers. I don't have them with me. It was pretty small.
Yeah. I have them right here. David estimated that the annual striping cost would be about $9,500, signs $500, stormwater $6,000, snow removal, and this is obviously dependent on who's doing the snow removal and whose road it is, would be $10,000, and that varies based on the severity of the winter.
I'm just talking about this deal. If you take out all the things we wouldn't have to do because we're not going to own the road. Just
the storm drain and the curb and gutter would be the upgrades.
We have the storm drain. Jeff, do we know how many linear feet of concrete there are there?
I don't know that I've seen that. Two and a half miles.
2.5 miles. And that obviously... Yeah, and everything north of Cedar Hills Drive already has the curb gutter. It'd be everything south to the Murdoch Canal. So it'd be maybe half.
About a mile and a half.
Yeah, mile and a half.
So the storm drain was about 6,000.
Sweeping would be included as an additional 2,000.
2,000.
That's part of the
storm water. So it might cost us. Are we talking around 10,000 a year? We're talking to maintain.
If we're doing the striping.
Well, why would we have to do the striping? Is that part of the?
We don't have to. No, okay. That was just something that David.
So I heard that was thrown out there.
Yeah, I heard stormwater 6,000. I heard sweeping 2,000. So I'm hearing 8,000. And then
we estimated $1,000 for rock removal, but now they have those Jersey barriers out there that should alleviate most of that problem.
So and then how
we're
much
looking at about $8,000.
Yeah, how much would it cost us if we did it ourselves? If we went and put curb and gutter ourselves?
We can't. It's not our road.
Installing it?
They wouldn't allow us to do that if it wasn't our road.
No, because they don't want to maintain it because it's not something that the county does. They don't install curb and gutter and drainage on a county road. That's why they wouldn't allow us to do the upgrades ourselves.
And how long would we be in perpetuity required to do this $8,000 a year upgrades?
As long as we wanted those facilities.
As long as the road's there. It'd be forever, but the $8,000 is significantly less than the alternative that they were proposing.
And talk to me about, again, why you and David and Jeff feel like that storm drain and the curb and gutter is going to make a huge difference.
Well, if you go up and down Canyon Road, you notice this time of year there's always potholes, and it's because it's due to freezing. When there's freezing and they drive the blades down there, it chips up big chunks of that road because the water can't go off. The water goes under the surface, and you see that cracking underneath the road. That's because the drainage is going under the road, and it's ruining the sublayer of the road. This drainage would take that to the curb gutter, put it into a storm drain system, and take it away from the road, thereby giving the road a longer lifespan.
And I believe we have some homes on Canyon Road that are being flooded every year as well because of drainage issues.
We hear about that quite often. I don't know if they're all in Cedar Hills. They could be in Pleasant Grove. It's an issue for both cities.
Yeah.
So we have that 9220 north down there where you call the duck pond. The water just sits there. And when the water sits there on the road, it really deteriorates the road quite quickly. Yeah.
So I don't even know if the rest of the commissioners are going to be on board with this or not. I just don't want to waste any more Commissioner Elderson's time, or at least time, if our council is not interested in doing that at all. That's what I
think it's really up to something we could even bounce off some city residents. I mean, is it worth $8,000 a year, which is very minor, to have curb and gutter on that road?
So I'm quite in favor of it for a couple reasons. Three reasons, actually. One is what you're saying is going to prolong life of road, make for a better road. Second one is we have residents who have significant drainage problems, and we owe it to help our residents for minimal costs like this. And the third one is having curb and gutter is going to make that road safer for people to bike on it. It's not going to have a bike lane, but it will at least make the road without the soft shoulder, and you can conceivably bike down that road, which people do already. And so this is something that could actually save lives for a relatively small cost.
Mike, just give me thumbs up, thumbs down. Are you in favor of continuing discussions?
Sure.
Okay. Rob, are you in favor of continuing discussions?
I will just say I'm a little bit annoyed that we didn't follow our resolution, but it does sound like it might be something worthwhile to us in the long run, so I think I'm okay with it.
Ben, are you okay continuing discussions?
Yeah, I don't like the idea of paying for Pleasant Grove, but
I think that'll get worked out. Yeah. At the meeting when we had with Pleasant Grove, I asked Mayor Daniels, when everyone was there, if Pleasant Grove would be okay with creating a formula whereby they share the cost of the road, and he said yes.
And that's awesome. Regardless, I think Jenny and has done a wonderful job to convince me that
I know Jenny's in favor of that. So there's your direction.
Okay.
Mayor.
Okay.
Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Could I one more topic on this highway?
Yes.
As per instruction from our last meeting, to approach the county about including the city sewer project as an alternate bid on the road project. I've talked with the engineer, and they are in favor of that. We do have a preliminary plan that we would need to finalize for that sewer project. The project scope includes all of the sewer going north through an area which is all Pleasant Grove homes.
Okay.
So staff would like direction from council as to the scope of that sewer project so that we could finalize the plans and give them to the county.
I think we talked about this last time. Are you at a point where at our next meeting you could come and present a detailed presentation where the council can give you feedback based on data that they're looking at?
Correct. Two meetings from now I could.
So then, Chandler, let's put this on our next meeting.
He won't be here the next meeting, Mayor. The following meeting, he can.
Whenever it is.
Quick question on that.
Appreciate that.
In order to service homes that are in Cedar Hills, do we have to, I'm assuming we have to go through Pleasant Grove, so.
No, we only have four homes that we would be servicing.
Oh, I see.
But it's two different directions because of the slope. So it would probably change the scope of the project by 50%.
Okay, I'll wait until you get us more details on it.
Thank you.
Okay, we will look forward to that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion was seconded by Mr. Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. We're adjourned.